Life gives you to run around, you say. You wanna know how much dues must you pay? Well, you can have what you want to. Where there's a will, there's always a way. Keeping your eyes on that mountaintop, one step at a time. Don't ever, ever stop. Keep on when your mind says quit. Dream on till you find you're living it. I'll be right by your side. Yeah, baby, keep on. Don't stop till you win your prize. Lean on all the love that's in my eyes. You're a diamond to me. Yes, you are. Shine on. Shine on. Been through.
That's Eric Bibb with Shine On. It's from his 2007 album, Eric Bibb, Diamond Days. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And guess what? It is Friday, the day we free our minds, we declutter all those thoughts we've been hanging, that have been hanging around in our heads. We clear them out to make room for more good stuff next week. But today, it's your day. It's the day that you get to express yourselves and you voice your opinions, your ideas, you share information, and you help to create community and, hopefully, action. 888-874-4888 is the number to call to get things started. I'm expecting some vigorous stuff here today because so much has gone on in the news and on this program. So you have a lot to talk about today. 888-874-4888. This day is set aside for you. And I take this very seriously because we have so much to offer. We may not think that, but we are the byproduct of all these years of life on this planet. We have personal experience. We have knowledge we have acquired, sometimes the hard way. But we have things that we can say that would enlighten and contribute to, you know, people just expanding their universe. And in any event, one of the things that I complain about all the time is that our community, the so-called progressive community, if you will, we don't talk enough to each other. We just don't. We like to listen and hear other people talk, but we also have to recognize that we have something to contribute to the general discourse. So what do you have to offer? What do you think we should be pondering and discussing a bit more? What would you like to share with us to get us, you know, to widen and broaden and deepen our understanding of things? This is the reservoir that you'd make your deposit in and from which we can draw regularly in the course of our conversations. So, Free Your Mind Friday, 888-874-4888. New York gets us started today with Joel. Hello, Joel.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm fine. Amidst everything that's been going on, there was a rather important event that happened in Tel Aviv in Jerusalem last week, maybe about a week before that, that I think got a little lost in the midst of all the chaos that's going on there. And what happened was that Netanyahu made a speech to a worldwide Zionist assembly. Perhaps you may have heard about it. And what
yes.
he said was quite amazing. He argued that Adolf Hitler didn't really want to exterminate the Jews. He wanted to expel them. And when he met the Mufti of Jerusalem, it was the Mufti who convinced him to burn the Jews. thus the Holocaust was born. So the conclusion from all of this was that as bad as Hitler was, he wasn't as bad as people think he was. The Germans weren't really to blame. It was the Palestinian leader, the Mufti of Jerusalem, who was really the instigator behind the murder of 6 million Jews. And if the subject had been different, the speech would, you know, could be considered as one of the usual lies and falsifications that's typical of Netanyahu. Hitler wasn't really so bad. The Palestinians are to blame. The Mufti was the forerunner of Muhammad Abbas, that kind of thing. Just a routine piece of political propaganda. But really, what this concerns is the Holocaust, which was, after all, you know, one of the most atrocious events of the 20th century. And it has a bearing, a direct bearing on the lives of half the Jewish population of Israel, many of whom lost their relatives in the Holocaust, who were themselves as survivors. So the speech wasn't just a minor manipulation. And as a result, there was an immediate outcry. It went viral on the Internet, which is where I saw it. You know, there are many, many people who have written about the Holocaust, and there's a lot of scholarship that's been going on for the past 50 years. And a lot of detail has been researched over and over again. So even the Holocaust survivors were shocked because Netanyahu was really absolving Hitler and the Germans in general. Merkel, I remember that Merkel chimed in, and she did the decent thing and issued an immediate denial, assuming, you know, total blame of the German people and the German government for what happened. But I just think it's kind of revealing it kind of tells you, you know, where things are going. And it says something about the state of mind of this leader.
Well, I thought it was very startling when he made the pronouncement that really it wasn't Hitler to blame. Hitler was pretty much goaded or persuaded to exterminate millions of Jews and others, of course. But it was not really his fault. He was kind of influenced by a Palestinian mufti of Jerusalem.
I agree with you.
The reaction was immediate. But I'm asking, here in the United States, what do you think of the coverage that got?
Well, you know, before I say something about it, it didn't get very much. And the coverage, of course, was slanted. For the obvious reasons, but I would just like to, in the few minutes that I have on the air, to bring some historical light to this question. One of the things that you never hear in the United States, you hear it among revisionist historians, especially among courageous revisionist Israeli historians, and of course you hear it among some of the really fine Palestinian scholars who are out there who've looked at this, but one of the amazing things about Zionism as an ideology was that in the mid-1930s, if you really think about this very seriously and carefully, one of the aims of the major aim of the Zionists and one of the aims of the Nazis as it relates to European Jewry coincided. In the 1930s, there was no indication whatsoever that the Nazis were planning to industrially exterminate the Jews. That happened after the invasion of Russia. Until that time, the Nazis were very vocal about wanting to expel them from Europe. And the Zionists felt the same way. They wanted a Jewish homeland in Palestine. And fairly soon after that, both the Nazi administrators who were involved with this question and the Zionists recognized that they had this sort of strange marriage of interests. And there was actually a meeting between right-wing Zionists, I won't go into all the details now because I don't have the time, and the Nazis just before the Nuremberg Party meeting of 1935. And if you look at the protocol of the Nuremberg Party meeting and the famous rally that followed that, the protocol says that we have a serious problem with a, quote, Jewish problem in Europe, and the best answer would be to expel them, and they should be sent to Palestine. And the reason why that happened is because the right-wing Zionists concocted a deal with Nazi administrators in which they agreed to fight the British. After all, you know, colonial struggle was going on, and the right-wing Zionists had the foresight to recognize that a war was looming in Europe, and that if they allied with the Nazis, they would be able to get their state in Palestine, and the Nazis agreed. And there were many, many other incidents. So there was an incident in 1942 when there was a real division among the left Zionists and the right-wing Zionists, and the right-wing Zionists collaborated with the Nazis to help move the people into railway cars, because they, because the Nazis convinced the right-wing Zionists that if they, if they ratted on the left-wing Zionists and they were exterminated, they would have their state in Palestine. And there was a lot of collaboration between Zionists and Nazis before the final solution was, was begun in early 1942. So if anybody wants to really make any connection between the final solution and history, they have a look at some of the collaborative efforts on the part of Zionists with the Nazis. And by the way, there are two excellent books on this, both by the author Lani Brenner, B-R-E-N-N-E-R, and one is called 33 Documents. It's just primary sources that goes through all of this. And another one is his own work of history called Zionism in the Age of the Dictators. So I just thought I would bring all that up.
Well, thank you. Thanks for starting us off today.
Okay, bye now.
Thank you. We stay in New York with K.Y. I hope I got that right. Hello, you're on the air.
It's Jay, Utrecht. How are you today?
Fine, but you're breaking up.
Can you hear me better?
A little bit better, yes.
Okay. Listen, how are you feeling?
I'm all right. I'm hanging in.
Good, good. You sound great.
Thank you.
You know, I was thinking about the many things that you have said over the course of this beginning electoral season with these Democrats and Republicans. And it has really come to my attention that this is what you've been saying about money. And it's about money on both sides, not only with the network, but with the candidates also. And a prime example is this character, Ben Carson. But the thing that really took me by surprise was who the puppet master of Ben Carson is.
Before you go any further, I have to ask, are you on speakerphone?
My volume may be down. I'll probably turn it up.
Are you on speakerphone? Just turn it off because it the sound reverberates and then we can't hear you as clearly as we ought to.
Is the sound better?
Well, we'll take it.
what I'm saying is the puppet master is Armstrong Williams. Now, it's really, really surprising, first of all, that if you look at
why do you think Armstrong Williams? First of all, why do you think Ben Carson has a puppet master? And why would you think, if he does, it would be Armstrong Williams? I know Armstrong Williams has been very firmly in his camp. Armstrong Williams is a radio personality, a media personality, and a staunch left, left of the right. In the Republican camp, he is ultra, ultra right, so right that he's actually left. But anyway, why would you think that he would be some kind of puppet master for Ben Carson?
Because, first of all of the things that Ben Carson is basically saying is things that Armstrong Williams have said, and things that Armstrong Williams promote. And knowing that from what you see in the media of the people surrounding Ben Carson, everyone is basically saying that all decisions are being made through Armstrong Williams.
But now, really, that really, I think, is a stretch. I imagine that he has some kind of contact with Armstrong Williams, but really, I think Ben
Carson,
give him some credit
Armstrong
for having
Williams.
A brain
of
his own.
I've heard and seen Armstrong Williams on the media talk about his relationship with Ben Carson, and I'm telling you, Utrecht, Armstrong Williams is the man who is in Ben Carson's ear more than anyone else.
Okay, I mean, so now that he is, okay, he has his finger on the pulse of Ben Carson. So what does that do? How is that a threat in your view?
Well, I don't really see it as the threat that people have been saying that it is, because now I realize it's about money. It's not really about his ideas and the things that he's promoting. It's about selling books and setting up engagements later on down the line.
And how is that different from Hillary Clinton selling books and Donald Trump just began selling his latest book, which is, if you want to know where I stand in this election, buy my book. It's only 167 pages. It's all about money. We got that.
You treat. I'm not saying it's no different, because it's all for the same. They all the same. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm just amazed that people haven't picked up on it and the players that is involved. And I'm more shocked and amazed that Armstrong Williams would have that type of influence to pull off what he's pulling off. Because everything that Ben Carson says and does, it just boggles the mind to me. I mean, I'm like amazed by him, to be honest with you. I'm shocked that he's getting away with doing the thing that he's doing at this point in time as a black man.
Well, guess what? It is just beginning. We are just beginning to appreciate the intellectual depth of Ben Carson, and we have a whole year to go. So it's just beginning.
Do you stay really tuned. Think he will be at this for the long haul?
Stay tuned and fortify your system, because there's much, much more to come.
Thanks. It is. I think it's crazy.
Thanks for your call, though. Great to hear from you today. We're going to Berkeley, where we meet Harvey. Harvey, what's going on in Berkeley?
Well, hello, wonderful Utrice.
Hello, and wonderful Harvey.
Great things are going on in Berkeley. As far as I'm concerned, hatred is a virus of the mind, and the hate virus is extremely deadly and has caused the death of millions of people. But here in Berkeley yesterday, there was incredible news. The more than 2,000 students from Berkeley High went into the streets at 9 a.m. because there was a racist rant on one of the school's library computers, and the people got up and they went out into the street. The new generation, they're not taking it. They're not taking it anymore. I'm really happy about that. And the truth is, we're all different from each other, but at the same time, we are one. And the reason that we're all different from each other is because variety is the spice of life. Being different from each other is the gift, not the curse. And I don't know if you know this, wonderful Utrice, but the first coin minted in the USA had the words on it, "We are one." At the time, it meant that the 13 American colonies joined up as one. But I think that that's as relevant then in 1787, or it's as relevant today as it was in 1877. And we are one. That's what's happening. I see a change here, Utrice, and it's for the better.
What became of the protest? How was it covered, and how was it received in Berkeley?
Well, you know, I first noticed all the helicopters flying up in the air around the downtown area, and it was received very well. The school principal went out with the students. It was incredible, and there was a program this morning talking about it on the radio, that there was solidarity for everyone, and everybody saw it as a great coming together, as a joining of all the different groups. So I think this is the new spirit is with us here, and it's a spirit of seeing each other as letting each other be different, but be one at the same time.
Great. Good news from Berkeley. Thanks so much for calling in, Harvey, today.
Thank you, Utrice.
We go to Chicago. Henry, you're on the air.
Hey, Utrice, how's it going?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing good. As we said, off the air in regards to, we communicated via electronic email, I went to New York last week to see Dr. Horn, since he gave a lecture over at NYU for the book he talked about on your show Wednesday, Confronting Black Jacobins. And I'm currently reading it now. I'm only in the fifth chapter. And, you know, just like with his previous book, it's a page-turner. And you know, me as a student of history, you know, bring in, because, you know, one of my favorite revolutions in history has been the Haitian Revolution. But the thing about it is that a lot of stuff that he's brought out is sort of like, you know, kind of like new news to me. And I was actually surprised, you know, that he found out a lot of new things about it while he was studying it. You know, like, for instance, when he mentioned about, you know, the Haitians having a navy, you know, it's like, I didn't know that neither, which, you know, I'm kind of reading into it now. But as I read the book, like I said, I'm only about halfway into the book now, but as I read it, and, you know, any historical periodical book or article that I, you know, kind of read, I kind of look into, you know, current day events and see how all this affects, you know, what's going on today. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I thought about was arms dealing among nations, and how it backfires, because, you know, the one thing Dr. Horn had said in his book was how the U.S. and the British basically gave munitions to Tucson during the first wave of the revolution, because I guess it was to their benefit to keep the French, you know, out of the hemisphere. Well, let's be known to the Americans that when the Haitians finally declared independence, it became a threat because of the fact that the slaveholders in Dixie, you know, were already worried about, you know, the slaves, you know, trying to liberate themselves within their homeland. But now it's like, now they have an independent colony now, and it became a larger threat to, you know, to the United States. So it was interesting that, according to what Dr. Horn said, Washington sent arms to the South, you know, to protect the Gulf states, you know, from the threat of, you know, maybe the Haitian army, you know, coming in and trying to liberate the slaves. But what ended up happening was, a couple of decades later, the South basically turned those arms to the North and caused the Civil War. So I think about that, and I think about the ISIS situation.
Hoping you would make that. Go ahead. I'm with you.
But you know, in the situation with ISIS, it's like, you know, the U.S. decided to arm the crazy faction of Al Qaeda in the first Syrian civil war that happened a couple of years ago. And now it's like they turned their guns against American interests now. And then it's like, you know, the arms dealing is like, you know, arms dealing is a very, very volatile thing, you know, with us. And it stretches back to the Haitian Revolution. So I thought about that. And I also thought about diplomatic relations. And I wanted to ask you about this because, you know, I get into discussions about this. There is a lot of heavy activity with Chinese in the continent of Africa. And, you know, and as you know, like, when the president went to go visit Africa, you know, it was sort of like we get these messages from, you know, the U.S. and also, you know, some African nationalists about the concern of, you know, Chinese interests in Africa. They feel like they're the new colonizers now. But I kind of see it a little different because of the fact that, well, first of all, the Chinese are not going in there enslaving people. So, you know, I see it different as, like, say, the European colonizers from, like, the 19th and the early part of the 20th century. But, you know, in regards to, you know, diplomatic relations,
the activity that you see in Africa with the Chinese, do you think that it's something that they should be worried about, or is it a true 50-50 relation where they're trying? Because what Dr. Horn was saying too, was, you know, in order for our plight in this country as African Americans to be, more concerning, it needs to get on the world stage, which, you know, I agree wholeheartedly. But, you know, the one thing I do think is that we still need to get together as a people, because I don't think a lot of countries will be interested in working with us if we can't work, you know, together, you know, within our own communities. So I wanted to get your opinion on that.
Well, I think you, Africa, all of the African states, all of the Caribbean states, you cannot trust any empire. None of those entities are to be trusted, because in the end, whether they come to you under the guise of, well, we are communist, or we are socialist, or we are just plain old rabid capitalists, the fact is they're looking for the thing that you have, or the things that you have that are valuable. And it's the same story. I mean, the Chinese may be willing for the reasons of, you know, ideology and so forth. They may be a little bit different about it. But the Chinese, though they are communists, are very capitalist. You look at how they approach. And the interest in Africa and the Caribbean and other places, Brazil and so forth, Central and South America, the interest has to do with the acquisition of their resources. So whether it is China or Russia, the United States or England or France, it's about the acquisition of your land, whatever is on it, whatever is under it, over it, around it, on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the interest. As a primary interest. Now, at the same time, the real world is you can't expect perfection, and you can't expect that simply because they are not the United States that they will be operating on the up and up all the time. Absolutely not. China is as interested in maintaining a balance of trade favorable to itself, just like the United States is. China is interested in getting more for its money, that just like the United States is. You look, for example, at Jamaica. Mm-hmm. Here's a country, the Chinese have gone into Jamaica and Trinidad and all throughout the Caribbean. I mean, they'd have just dumped so much money into the Caribbean because they have locked up the resources of the Caribbean. And we got to be careful about these things. People say, well, it's China, and they have a different orientation than the United States. But when you look at the bottom line is access to and almost monopoly interest in your resources. They're coming after your fish. You know, there's a scarcity of fish in the Caribbean because the Chinese, the Japanese, they've just been marauders right through those waters. They are contributing certain things. They've been very careful to be ideologically more correct than the United States in their conduct. And at least you could say, well, they're building roads, they're building hospitals and so forth. That's good. But bottom line is, Jamaica will soon find itself basically producing, having all of its sugar production co-opted by China. And Trinidad will find a lot of its oil owned by China. You know, and you will find a substitution of monopoly. So Africa is the same thing. Africa is perhaps the most, it's actually, in my view, is the richest continent on the planet.
It is.
The Africans have not cooperated, and this was what Gaddafi had been trying to do, to encourage this, to understand that there was a great advantage to consolidating their economic power and control over their resources. And the primary resource, of course, is land, because the things that they want also are under the land. You know, the minerals, the gold, the oil, whatever it is. So you have to have the land, because the huge assets are under the land. So they have not yet seen the wisdom to be really ferocious about guarding, as a continent, that they have a shared interest in guarding their assets and managing their assets responsibly. And, of course, in this world of money, and there's so much corruption, people, heads of state and other leaders are likely to betray their own country and go for the money at the expense of the long-term prosperity that Africa should enjoy. So with the resources that Africa has, there is no reason that there should be such poverty and disease and lack of housing and lack of opportunity. There shouldn't be that at all. But you have that because that's the reality, the political reality of the world. So I'm saying, trust none of them.
Trust none of them. I agree. And this is why, you know, I talk to you and read somebody like Dr. Horn, you know, on international politics, because, you know, it gets very tricky and it gets very dicey. So, you know, I try to get an understanding of it so, you know, I can know, like, at least, you know, some of the stuff, you know, affects us here at home. And I know there's been a big push on, you know, us as African Americans to have a good relation with Africans on the continent, you know, because we're so, you know, disjointed and disconnected with, you know, the people from, you know, people from Africa, and we should have a closer relationship with them. But, you know, like I said before, I think, you know, because we are so disjointed here in the United States that, you know, there's not a lot of countries who are willing to, you know, take up our cause because of the fact that, you know, we're kind of like disjointed here.
Well, the thing is, and that's not anybody else's job. It's the people's job to do the work of consolidating their interests. It is also our job to respect the instructions that have been left by people who paid with their lives, in some cases, to leave them there, to put in black and white what you ought to do. We have no shortage of instructions. We have no shortage of templates. We have no shortage of advice and really considered opinion and instruction of the highest order. We have no shortage of it. We have a shortage of the will to respect that we have these things available to us. They came at great, great sacrifice. And they are workable, and we have a range from which to choose to go forward. But we have to learn the hard way, I guess.
We do.
So glad that you traveled all the way from Chicago to see Gerald Horn, and I hope you found it was a rewarding thing that you made a right decision to go and see him and hear him and get his book.
and you know what, Yatrice, I appreciate the knowledge from you and all the listeners and all your guests. And it is just, like I said, I've been listening to your show for over a year now, and I've learned so much in this, you know, year.
Me too. Me too. I learned a lot. Thank you so much. Great to hear from you, Henry. All right, we'll take this break and come back to your calls. We'll continue the conversation at 888-874-4888 right after this.
Yeah, heart and wisdom's something you can't buy. It's the wings of experience that make you fly. Don't look down, don't look back, don't turn around. You're on the right track. Keep on when your mind says quit. Dream on till you find you're living it. I'll be right by your side. Yeah, baby, keep on. Don't stop till you win your prize. Lean on over love that's in my eyes. You're a diamond to me. Yes, you.
Yeah, keep shining on. That's what we do here on Lead Stories and on PRN.FM. You're listening to Lead Stories and you're listening to Free Your Mind Friday. And it is the open forum that we connect with each other. We trade information, opinions, ideas. It's free form. Nobody tells you what to think. And it is a way of helping us appreciate the fact that we have available to us all this information, and we should be building community through conversation and contact with each other. And that is the way we roll. So 888-874-4888, this is the time to just connect and let us know what you're thinking and what you're thinking about and why you're thinking what you're thinking, what you'd like us to know, what you'd like us to think. All of that is in the mix. Henry from Chicago had sent me a note, actually, to tell me, guess what? I'm going to New York City, and I'm going to go see Gerald Horn. And that was amazing to me, and for this reason. Amazing because here's a person who went to, I would say, considerable expense in pursuit of knowledge. You have no idea what that does to my heart. In pursuit of knowledge, he would get on a plane and go to New York City to attend a lecture. So valued is Gerald Horn's instruction on this program to him. That is great. And so if we have that thirst for knowledge, we have that thirst for information, and we have an open heart, and we genuinely interested in broadening our horizons, wanting to know, wanting to connect, it therefore is almost natural that you would do it. But it's so great to hear that people would make such an effort to pursue information and knowledge. And it was, in fact, he was just sending me a note, he thought. He was just sending me a note to say, well, you know, I've been listening to Gerald Horn on your program, and I'm going to see him. But what it said to me is that the program has a purpose. And if it does just this, if it connects a person who is desirous of knowing and learning with a person who has devoted so much of his life to researching and writing, hey, that's what a revolution looks like. That's what a revolution looks like. That's the work. And therefore, a program that can put these two people together and excite a person to the point of saying, I really want to know some more. I really want to go see this person. I really want to get this book. I really want to make personal contact with. That just made my whole, that has made the rest of my year right there. So I'm deliriously happy. How about you? 888-874-4888. I just want to thank you so much always for the level of conversation that you bring to this program. You are always contributing at a high level. That's great. And I learn too. So we're all teaching each other. This is peer education, P-E-E-R, peer education. This is what PRN should be doing and is doing. This is what Lead Stories should be doing and is doing. If you agree, you let me know. All right, so what are you thinking? Let's pick up the conversation on the other half at 888-874-4888. We want to hear what you have to say, and we have no callers queued up just yet. Okay, so let me tell you what I want to do, and I'll begin to do that starting next week. I'll be more methodical in the way we proceed with things, because this is an election year, and not just because it's an election year, but the issues being raised. And if you noticed, I had begun doing this business of providing a lot of background information that would allow you to appreciate when an issue comes up. As Henry just said, we talk about things, and there's a method to the madness. The method is to provide context for things that will be in the news, for things that will be discussed. Joel started us off today with a historical context for it. I mean, it just isn't there when these issues are discussed. When the media noted the outrageous statement by Netanyahu, Benjamin Netanyahu of Israel, that it was a Palestinian religious leader in Jerusalem who caused Hitler to enact and to execute the Holocaust of Jews, I mean, it didn't get that much coverage here, did it? And one would think that with a very powerful and with a very concerned Jewish population in the United States, where we always talk about Israel and so forth, we get a lot of reaction there, but no criticism. It was quite muted. But the context of that we got today from Joel, an extraordinary contribution, saying we have to be aware that there's a corroboration and collaboration between Zionism and Nazism, that they weren't two separate entities at one point. There were instances of ongoing collaboration. Now, would you get that in any other media organization as a part of the necessary context for the discussion of Benjamin Netanyahu's statements? No. But that's what we do here. That's important. When I shared with you Dr. Jan Carew's lecture on the joining of effort between the First Nations and Africans who had freed themselves, and the joining together to resist, and by the way, that was more than half a century of military resistance, armed resistance to the genocidal interests. You don't hear about that. You don't hear that history. You probably have not heard this history at all, anywhere. But you should hear it here. And we make an effort to discuss that. So by the time Gerald Horn came to us on Wednesday, we had already discussed Haiti in many dimensions. And look, the topic was Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Have we not discussed these things in detail, so you have an appreciation of it? And what's more, things that we dismiss as inconsequential only because of our ignorance. We are severely ignorant, all of us, because it is in the interest of a system that seeks to maintain ignorance of people in order to control us all, and in order to execute its plans. It requires us to be ignorant of history, to have no context at all other than that which is provided by them and the sycophantic media organizations. So this is the way we begin to form some kind of a counter to that. And we share information with each other. We bring our personal knowledge and experience, which is education. And we create or begin the process of creating a community of interest. we are actually fighting ignorance, intellectual ignorance. We are fighting it. And this is how we do it. So I'm going to be doing much more of that, because in this election season, we are going to be bombarded. And the media, as I've been discussing with you, the media will be a major, if not the most critical element in the fight to dumb us down. I've discussed with you that they have already begun the game, and it is about money. How much money are they going to make? The concessions they individually, as news organizations, have made and will continue to make to get a chunk of that $5 billion plus dollars in advertising money that's coming down. They will sell their souls, they already have, and we will pay the price. But we also have to begin to use media as a way of advocating, because we have to ask questions about the progressive community. What are you doing? What is this silence? What is this automatic support that is being given to people who are just lethal to our interests, like Hillary Clinton? Why are women, the women's movement, how do you explain support of Hillary Clinton or Carly Fiona? How do you explain that? No. We have to use media in a different way. So I'm going to be doing that. I also am going to try and launch a small little idea of my own, and it is about bringing people together who have a shared interest in knowledge and information, and work to help you form small groups. Many people in the listening audience have already begun that. It's amazing to me, and I'm so thankful about it. They have begun study groups. They listen. They're not necessarily physically together when they study, but they have organized themselves as a kind of a group that would keep in touch with each other and coordinate their listening. And they would listen to a podcast, and they will discuss it. And they have been writing me about what they think about the programs and what they're getting out of it and how they are forming study groups. And this is incredible. That's fantastic. One of the things that I used to do, I used to teach, and I always stress the fact that people have incredible things to share with each other and to encourage education. And this is a great way. So if you would like to start a study group based on what we discuss here on Lead Stories, please write me a note and let me know. It's very easy to do. You need only one or two other people, or three others, or how many others you would like to, you know, start this group. And you listen to the program. You agree on which program you want to listen to, or you work it however you want to work it. And then you figure out what you liked, what you didn't like, but what you learned, and how much more effort you will be making to learn a little bit more. All right? So do that. Let me know about that. That's one other thing. And the third thing I want to talk about is I'm going to try and get to New York shortly and talk about health. And talk about the importance of radically changing health habits in order to just simply outfox the enemy and survive them. If for no other reason than to irritate the heck out of them that you live a lot longer, it's worth it to do just that. But seriously, I've lost so many friends. Over the years, in the last couple of years, I've lost so many. And as you know, my diagnosis was kind of serious, and it is. And I'm dealing with a very serious health issue, cancer. But I feel good, and I'm following a very rigorous protocol. And it is doing me a lot of good. So I see the efficacy of it. I see the sense it makes. And I have the proof that it will help me. I'm under no illusions, by the way, that this is a cure. It's not. What I have is not curable. But it can be contained, and it can be, you know, it can be tampered down so that you can have a decent quality of life. And that's my goal. My goal is to just contain it as much as I possibly can. So we're succeeding on that level, and I'm really happy about it. But I really would like for, if nothing else, but just to get people into thinking about ways in which every day we compromise our health. And we don't pay as much attention to it as we should. And sometimes it is very late in the game when we do. So I want to encourage you to do that. I'm putting together just a small thing that people can do to take care of themselves and take care of their families, especially their children and grandchildren, to encourage them to be a bit more conscious about it. But we're losing way too many people. Really, we are. And we have to do a little bit better in our approach to our health. We very often say, well, I don't have the time, and we have all kinds of reasons and excuses and explanations as to why we wouldn't do what we need to do. But as we discuss on this program and Gary's program and throughout PRN, we talk about the plans of agribusiness, the ways in which it is doing things that, you know, are just so harmful to our health. And if you shorten your lifespan, you shorten your time with people who are important to you, it is a tremendous loss. That is a tremendous loss. So I'm going to try and find a way to just gently prod you, not going to beat you over the head, because ultimately that's your decision which way you want to go, but to just be more careful about your health and to be more conscious about your health, because you can't make any changes and you can't make any contributions if you're dead. Okay? It's as simple as that. Live longer to annoy the system. Live longer to frustrate them. And you do that by being a bit more careful and be a little more vigilant about what you eat. There are more populations that are more susceptible to particular kinds of diseases, and they're running rampant. I can't tell you how many people I know personally who have died so early in their lives, and in the end, of things that are preventable, you know, and things that can be reversed, like diabetes and hypertension and stroke and certain things like that, where there's a direct link between these really serious diseases and disorders and your ability to do something about it. Some things you can't do anything about. I have never smoked in my life, but cancer is in my lungs. And how do we do that? How, you know, I can't reverse that. That's the way it is. So there are things that we can do something about. And those things that we can do something about, I aim to encourage people to do them. So we've come to the end of the program. I thank you so much for your contributions today, and I thank you always for operating at a very high level. It is a great joy and a great sense of pride to me that we are consistent in our conduct with each other on this program. So thank you so much. The weekend is here. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life. avoid, like the plague they are, people who are negative or who have nothing to contribute to you that elevates you and that adds good positive dimension to your life. Keep yourself safe over the weekend, and know from me, it is a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Let's see each other on Monday. Bye-bye.